Okay, dear Dhamma friends, we have come back to the session. Now we are going to discuss about a particular topic which is related to the mindfulness. And actually we were discussing Kayagata Sati Sutta, which has very relevance to this development of mindfulness, because it is extremely relevant to the beginners. Because this sutta particularly talks about how to develop mindfulness using the body. There are various methods, various ways of developing mindfulness. And for that, we are using various means, mechanisms to establish mindfulness. So, establishing mindfulness on the body is one aspect. So, this is the most straightforward aspect, because for a beginner, using one's own mind, looking at various thoughts arising in the mind would be a little difficult. And immediately going for some subtle phenomena would be difficult. But if we are able to recognize various postures of the body, how this body is breathing, what are the effects of breathing, what are the other changes happening in the body as a result of breathing, or what are the various elements time to time come forward in this body? What are various sensations? And what are the various composition of this body? How it is made up with? So likewise, this very body can be used to develop mindfulness, and again to develop concentration, and again to develop wisdom. So in this Kayagata Sati Sutta, so therefore Buddha is taking us a very deep journey, starting with very basic, simple practices. So, in a way, it's a rule of thumb to understand when the practice is simple, when it is consisting of various simple practices, training techniques, then it has the possibility of taking us to a real depth. On the other hand, if some kind of a practice is very complicated, very complex, many things to remember, lot of graphs to remember, lot of tables to memorize, then it may not take us to the depth. Rather, it may simply end up with some conceptual understanding, conceptual proliferation. But on the other hand, if any practice consists of very simple direct experiences, paying attention to very direct, simple experiences, it has the possibility of calming down the mind and looking inside, diving deep, and to understand the inner traits and to come up with a lot of wisdom. So, Kayagata Sati Sutta actually consists of such very direct methods which we can apply to develop mindfulness. And once mindfulness is established, we can further use it to develop clear comprehension. And that actually operates as a seed of wisdom. And as a result, we can further develop wisdom as well. Now, we get into another topic in this sutta that is dealing with the jhana. You know, if we are able to develop anapanasati, there is a possibility of arising of a nimitta, arising of a sign, which actually will be capable of bringing us to some deeper concentrated levels. So once a while, having that kind of a buffet would be very joyful, because nowadays a lot of disturbing news is spreading, and a lot of kind of depressive ideas may be popping up. So therefore, time to time have this kind of a blissful experience would be a wonderful escape from our this kind of a suffering world. But now, actually, in this section of the of this sutta, Buddha therefore appreciate various jhana, various absorptions, and giving us various similes. So in a way, enticing ourselves, encouraging ourselves to experience all these various absorptions. Actually, it is not that easy to develop higher concentrations, because it needs lot of training. And on the other hand, if we are to practice vipassana, jhana is not a must. So if we have a fair amount of concentration, with that concentration, we actually can get on to vipassana, and jhana is not a must. But if one is having some experience of jhana, so that also is an added experience, added value to one's own practice. Now, last time we discussed about the first jhana, and as I said, it has five components, five jhana factors. Based on that, we can say it is the first jhana. Say, for example, when mind is concentrated on the nimitta, concentrated on the sign of concentration, so we again and again applying our attention to that concentration sign. Again and again, we are applying the mind. Again and again, we are applying the mind. So this applying mind, applied thought is called vitakka. So that characteristics is present in first jhana. And again, once the mind is applied to that nimitta, concentration sign, then the mind is very much like rubbing on that nimitta, rubbing on that concentration sign. Mind is examining it, keeping with it, associating it. And kind of a movement is there, kind of a very slight movement, just being with that concentration sign. And that is called kind of a observation, kind of a vichara, sustained thought. So we are, once the mind is applied to the concentration sign, so we are roaming around. We are simply associating it. We are simply behaving with it. So this is a sustained thought called vichara. Now, if we are able to concentrate very well like this, then all the past memories, future plans, daydreaming, fantasizing, all these unnecessary parts will be dropped. So they will be simply discarded and mind become very lighter. A lot of heaviness is dropped, discarded. As a result, the mind become very lighter. And as a result, mind become happy, joyful. So the piti, the rapture, and the joy, and again, the kind of a happiness, kind of a composed mind, kind of a comfortable mind, feeling at ease, and again, very satisfied. So this kind of a feeling actually gives us a lot of happiness, kind of a comfort. So the piti and sukha are also available. And mind is not distracting, it is not going to here and there, but rather it is well concentrated and well absorbed to this concentration sign. That's the only object available in the spectrum of concentration. So therefore it is unified onto this concentration sign. Therefore these five factors actually defines the first jhana. And it's a very blissful experience. And the observer, the yogi simply can entertain it, can enjoy it, and have a very blissful experience. And now, suppose someone is practicing it. Now, when someone is practicing it, as time goes on, probably he might realize, so this mind again and again has to be applied to the concentration sign. And again, it has to be rubbed with this concentration sign. It has to be sort of associated with this concentration sign. It's a kind of a movement. Kind of a resistance is there. Kind of a friction is there. Because one has to apply the mind. And when we train the mind, actually the mind does it by itself. We don't need to really intervene. But still, there's a kind of a slight movement. Mind doesn't enjoy the complete rest, complete concentration, complete seclusion is not yet available, because there is a movement due to this applied thought. Again and again, the mind has to be applied onto the concentration sign. And once it is applied, again and again, the concentration sign being very much like touched, very much like rubbed by the mind. So that also is kind of a friction. So one will understand. So these two factors are a little troublesome. have some disadvantages. It is disturbing the mind. Now you will understand as our concentration and mindfulness increases. So this kind of a very minute kind of a movement, very subtle association, very subtle rubbing kind of a situation appear like a disturbance, appear like a hindrance. So as a result, one will drop those two. How about once the mind is simply applied onto the object, applied onto the concentration sign, how about just be? That's it. You once and for all, you simply apply your mind to the concentration sign. Once it is there, nothing else to do. Your mind is not going out at all. You don't need to intervene in the process. You don't need to again and again bring back the mind. Mind is still there. Mind is well concentrated. Mind has become singles. Mind has become sort of unified with this concentration sign. So if such possibility is available, that would be much more advanced or fairly mature when compared with the previous experience. So therefore, in the second jhana, one will simply discard this applied thought and the sustained thought. Vitakka and vichara will be stilled. So once it is applied, no more. Only once you have to apply it, and after that there is no any other application of mind. It is already there. It will be there for a fair amount of time. There is no movement at all. Now kind of a unification happened, and kind of a singleness of mind happened, and therefore one has a lot of self-confidence. Now one knows, once I get on to this level, once I get absorbed to this level, I am just there. There is no any wavering. There is no any distraction. There is no any resistance. There is no any friction. So simply just be. And again, there is a lot of rupture, a lot of happiness, kind of a joy, kind of a pressure is available. And the mind is well concentrated with this sign, concentration sign. Now, if one can experience this kind of a jhana, so that further sort of enrich the mind with a lot of concentration. So the mind is well fortified with concentration, well coupled with concentration, and there is no any movement at all. So the mind has become sort of come to its singleness. And the happiness is also still available. It is not kind of a blunt experience, but rather a lot of happiness, joy is still available, because you don't need to do anything to find out happiness. Mind is extremely happy, internally happy. So mind has found its own happiness internally. Typically, we always go outside in search of happiness. But now, we have found enough happiness. A lot of happiness is available. So therefore, a lot of joy, confidence is available in the second jhana. So Buddha giving a very beautiful simile here. Buddha says, like, assume there is a lake. Onto this lake, there is no any stream coming from the north direction. There is no any other stream coming from the south direction. No stream coming from the east direction. No stream coming from west direction. And again, there is no rain at all. Then how water is coming to this river? Sorry, to this lake. So there's a very cool fountain available in the middle. Kind of a sprinkle. And with that fount, with that sprinkle, there is enough water, a lot of water is constantly coming up. In the middle of the lake, there's a huge sprinkle, huge fount, and with that, a lot of water is coming from inside. And as a result, the whole river spill. whole lake spill. And the water is coming up and it is spilled out. It is very cool water. And nothing coming from outside is inside. From inside, lot of cool water coming up. As a result, the whole lake spilled up. Now, similarly, Buddha says, when enough joy, enough happiness, enough satisfaction is available within, then mind can have this kind of a situation. You are not looking for any sights to be happy. You are not searching for any music to be happy. You are not going after any incense to be happy. You are not going after any taste to be happy. Not going after any tactile sensations to be happy. You internally have enough happiness. Internally have a lot of pleasure. Internally you are well satisfied. So this kind of a contentment, this kind of a happiness, internal happiness, Buddha really encourage, appreciate, and therefore Buddha says, if one practice this kind of a jhana, now there is no point of going here and there in search of happiness, because happiness is available within ourselves. It's a matter of developing this level, developing this concentration, coming back to ourselves, refining the faculties, and absorbing to this second jhana. And internally now you are quite content. Internally you are quite satisfied. So if one practices this kind of a jhana, that also Buddha says will helps to discard all the mundane, worldly kind of thoughts. Typically we have enough thoughts like that, always going after, always finding fault, always going here and there in search of happiness, never being with ourselves, never satisfied in the present moment. Always something is missing. Always in an unsatisfied mood. Always in a kind of a depressive mood. But here, it is very much like you have everything now. What you were searching, everything is available right now. Something like that. So at such situation, mind prefers to be with the body. Mind doesn't want to go after anything else, and mind like to be with the body. So this, therefore Buddha says, helps us to have a really concentrated mind, a mind well behaving in within the body, and again kind of a quiet and concentrated within, inside the body. Now this mind associates the body. You don't need to sort of struggle to bring it back again and again. Rather, mind has found enough happiness within. Therefore, always it is returning back home, returning back to the body. It knows that a lot of happiness is already available within. A lot of contentment is already available within. There is no friction at all. If I am going out, lot of friction, lot of burning. So mind, like a child, now understood being at home is the safest. Nowadays, due to corona, you can't go out. So while being at home is the safest way of dwelling. So the second jhana is also like that. So you can develop second jhana, especially in the corona period. It's really tallying with it. So second jhana helps you to be at home, enjoy while being at home, be content while being at home. If you go outside, you get stuck, you get burned, you get the epidemic, you may get the PCR positive. But on the other hand, if you stay at home, your wife may prepare some food, your husband may clean the, say, house, your children may play with you, and you have a lot of happiness. Similarly, in this second jhana, you are not going outside in search of happiness. Internally, you have found a lot of happiness. internally you are quite satisfied. And again, mind is well concentrated. It is not sort of distracted, but really unified with the sign of concentration. So therefore, Buddha says, if one is developing this, then it is obvious that the mind associates this body. Mind become singleness with the body. Mind become unified with the body. And mind become well concentrated with the body. So with that, I like to conclude today's short Dhamma sermon. And now I open the session for questions.
I'm sorry, Bhante, there's currently three questions. Question number one is a general question. Dear Bhante, last week Bhante mentioned that if you are young and have enough time to practice, taking on samatha technique can be beneficial as well. With all respect, what is Bhante's definition of young and having time? Is it below 50 years?
Yeah, basically, I mean, this practicing jhana may take some time because you have to spend some time, you have to sort of test it, you have to learn from it, and it takes a lot of time. And even though we accidentally go there, that is not the real sort of a practicing of jhana. It is kind of a accident. It is kind of a randomly you enter into a deep concentration. But the jhanas are not like that. I mean, at first time it may happen like that, but later you have to practice it. You have to be familiarized with it. And therefore, typically it is said jhana vasita, that means mastering jhana. So how to enter first jhana? When it is necessary. Suppose you want to enter first jhana at any given moment. You determine, okay, I enter this jhana. So you can absorb immediately. And you can determine, okay, how long I want to spend there. Say 15 minutes I want to be in the first jhana. Then mind has to be trained to be in first jhana for 15 minutes. And after that, immediately it has to emerge from the jhana. So that also has to be practiced. That also has to be trained. And once emerged from the jhana, you can reflect how the experience was. You can reflect back. So that is also another mastery. So likewise, there are several mastering areas that one has to master jhana. And when one can master jhana, first jhana, then the disadvantages or the drawbacks of first jhana may be evident. You don't need to ask from someone. You yourself know these are the drawbacks of first jhana. So you can slowly turn your mind towards the second jhana. Second jhana also has to be practiced, has to be developed like that. You have to spend a lot of time there. Say you attend the first second jhana. You at the beginning you could only spend 5 minutes. Again and again you practice. Now you can spend there 10 minutes. Again and again you practice, and now you can spend there 15 minutes, 30 minutes, 1 hour. So likewise, you have to expand the being in this jhana, and how you can properly be there without getting distracted, without emerge prematurely. All these things we have to train. And that is why it is taking long time. It is not easy. And suppose you, after the mastery of second jhana, suppose you simply want to go to first jhana. Are you immediately attain first jhana? And if you want to now switch to second jhana, are you able to discard the first jhana factors, applied mind and the sustained mind? Applied thought and the sustained thought, are you able to drop those two and then attain the second jhana? And are you able to be there for a considerable or determined time period? And after that, automatically, are you able to emerge from it? And can you reflect the jhana factors, the experience you had while being in the jhana? So likewise, you have to master the second jhana. Then you have to master the third jhana. So likewise, this jhana mastery is a lifetime process, not an easy job. So there are many Hindu yogis who consider attaining jhana is the goal of the practice. So they spend their whole lifetime practicing this, whole lifetime mastering jhana. But Buddha says, even though there is a lot of bliss is there, even though a lot of enjoyment is there, it is simply a temporary enjoyment. In the maximum, it will take you to the Brahman realm. That's all. But there is no any reduction of defilements. There is no any cutting off of defilements. So that is the disadvantage. So you may spend the whole lifetime practicing jhana, mastering jhana, and you can even go to a Brahma realm. But again, once the power of concentration is ceased, again you have to come back. Again you may come to a celestial realm. Again you may come to a human realm. And from that you can even drop to a hell realm. So then in summary, even though these jhana practices giving a lot of inspiration and a lot of blissful experience, it is so temporary. And again, people have kind of a attraction towards them. But on the other hand, what is unique to Buddha? So that is the vipassana. So Buddha's teaching is primarily giving emphasis on the vipassana, development of the wisdom. So that is where the complete liberation is possible. That is where the complete freedom is possible. So that is why Buddha is encouraging us to develop four foundations of mindfulness, to develop the four noble truths. So that is where the freedom is possible, available. That is in the insight practices. So that's why I said, so if you are spending a lot of time attaining jhana and mastering jhana, it could be a waste of time. But on the other hand, if you are trying to develop wisdom, practice vipassana and develop various insights and understanding yourself, understanding various drawbacks in ourselves, understanding various mental patterns, understanding the habitual tendencies, then it's a kind of a self-understanding. It's a kind of a self-revelation. By knowing only we can correct ourselves. By knowing only we can discard all these defilements. We can fade away these defilements. So that is where the prominence is given in vipassana. So that's why I mentioned, if you have a lot of time to play in your life, then probably you can spend some time in developing jhana. Otherwise, if you are so eager to be free from samsara, to develop wisdom, then you may taste jhana maybe for a short time and then switch to vipassana, because in the vipassana approach only you will find the permanent solution.
Question number 2 of 4 is a general question. Dear Bhante, from first jhana to second, is there an appropriate time for transition or a sign which one should focus on? That's the end.
Yeah, actually, it depends on how you get mature. Because if you immediately try to switch to second jhana prematurely, then you even lost first jhana. So that's a disadvantage. If you are in a rush to get into the second jhana without spending enough time to register first jhana in your mind, to properly understand first jhana through your own experience, then you even lose first jhana. So that's the risk. So therefore, first you have to spend a fair amount of time in first jhana, mastering it and understanding how it is, what are each jhana factor, recognizing, understanding each and every jhana factor. Then only you will understand the drawbacks. Then only you will understand what it is this vitakka, what is this vichara, what is piti, what is sukha, what is ekaggata. All these jhana factors has to be well recognized, should understand properly. Then only it is possible to drop some heavy ones or the rough ones. and only enjoy the refined ones. So the first two jhana factors, as we develop first jhana, will appear like gross, will appear like kind of a hindrance, will appear like sort of a friction to the mind. Then the yogi naturally will drop the first two jhana factors and he may like to dwell in second jhana. So this is like a kind of a maturity happening in within the yogi's mind. So rather than trying to immediately jump to second jhana, therefore it is better to spend some time in first jhana, enjoying it, understanding it, properly recognizing all these five jhana factors, understanding them. And as a result, slowly you will discard first two jhana factors and then attain second jhana. That would be the most healthiest way of attaining second jhana.
Question number 3 of 6. This is for mindful walking. Dear Bhante, when I do mindful walking practice, I start focusing on the soles of each foot. I observe the pressure on the toes, how the pressure transfers to the toes along the sole and texture of the surface. I also observe the hot and cold nature on the soles. I start with left and right notation, but after some time, I can distinguish the differences and the noting drops. For about 5 to 10 minutes, these observations are really vivid and informative. Afterwards, if the mind is not distracted by thoughts, I can observe the same information fade away and settle to some basic sensations. I can sense the pressure on the soles, but cannot locate where they are. It is like a feeling of hardness and softness. I can sense the hot and cold nature, but they are mixed and vague. The walking practice continues like this at ease, in an effortless manner. I try to relate the above experience of my practice with your teaching, especially mindfulness on element characteristics. Before starting the practice, I had a dismissive attitude towards the classification of elements. For example, hardness, softness, hot, cold, air element, etc. I thought they were pretty basic, silly, and we are a long way ahead in terms of our understanding and scientific knowledge of the fabric of nature. Seems my ideology and attitude is completely wrong, and you only need to go down a bit to realize how the vivid world shatters underneath consists of very simple and basic things. Sometimes I think that it would have been much easier if I accept what you're saying, or Dhamma, 100%, and stop doubting and trying to logically reason out, judge and understand everything based on my thinking mind. Thought of writing down this note of gratitude along with my practice reflection. Much merits for your invaluable service with metta. That's the end.
Yeah, as you understood, more and more we practice, our mind has to be simple. So we have to discard all these too much knowledge, too much information, too much science, and then only our mind become lighter. Then only we can appreciate simplicity. Then only we can live peacefully. Then only the burden is reduced. Then only the clarity of mind will increase. Then only the mind become unentangled. So more we think, more will be the entanglements. More will be the confusion. So therefore, nowadays, a lot of scientific knowledge is available. A lot of internet is available. Information technology is available. And with the click of a button, you can get a plethora of information. And all these actually burden the mind, corrupt the mind. I'm not telling that learning is bad, but we have to keep a limit. When it is necessary to empty the mind, we should be able to empty the mind. When it is necessary to analyze, when it is necessary to sort of find out various patterns, etc., using some available information, that is also not a bad thing. But if we have the mastery on thinking, about thinking, then we should be in a position to stop ourselves when it is needed. If we become kind of a victim to sort of vicious thinking, various thought patterns, thinking patterns, then we are sort of becoming helpless. So that's why The practice helps us to understand all these drawbacks and to discard unnecessary thinking, unnecessary burdens. And then our mind become happy, comfortable, peaceful, clear, and having less entanglements. And clarity of mind is available. And more you understand that, and you will understand the practice also is leading towards that. More and more the techniques being used in the practice become very simple. It's very profound, by the way, very deep, very profound. But if we consider the tactic, it is very simple, very direct. So therefore, as you have mentioned, while walking, if you simply cannot understand the place of the foot and all these names what you have previously given, that is well and good. Don't try to find them. Don't try to impose those names. Don't try to paste any label. Rather, discard all those conceptual ideas and simply be with this present experience. Simply be with this moment. Simply be with this sensation. And simply observe how they are behaving. So, just to give you another way of examination, suppose if we consider ourselves, so we have a lot of designations, we have a lot of titles, we have a lot of skills, we have a lot of wealth, we have our own identity card, we have our CV, we have a lot of degrees, so much of identification, so much of complexity. But when Buddha says, there is nothing, what is available are merely six elements. And only in this body, if we consider, it is simply four elements. When we say like that, it's a kind of a radical reflection. It's a kind of a radical explanation, statement, because now you have to discard all those titles, all those designations, all those social status, all your past degrees and etc. And come back to this simple, direct, vivid four elements. Nothing but elements. So it's an utter simplicity. Buddha is taking us to a very direct simplicity that this whole experience, whole physical experience is nothing but elements. So if you are able to come to that kind of an understanding, so you will easily reduce grasping. You will easily reduce holding. And your mind become very clear, free from friction, and a lot of happiness is available, a lot of peace is available, and you will understand unnecessarily we are complicating the situation. Unnecessarily we are grabbing all these snakes. They are simply mind their own business, but we go and interfere. We go and grab troubles, get into troubles. But if we mind our own business, simply we can be happy, we can be mindful, we can be concentrated, we can be satisfied, and we can be peaceful. So therefore, if you can understand your own distractions, your own proliferation, perplexities, that is good. So then you discard them, become very simple, very humble, coming back to yourself, living on earth, grounding. So this is the practice.
Question number 4 of 7. This one is a general question. Therwan Saranai Bante. Lately, when I listen to Bana or while meditating, I have been falling asleep. This never happened before, and I was able to concentrate the whole time when I was listening to Bana for hours and hours. Falling asleep keeps happening quite often for the past week, even when I was trying to be mindful. I would greatly appreciate any advice. Much merits. That's the end.
So there could be many reasons, not just one reason. I can't immediately tell you this is the exact reason. There could be possibilities, many reasons. One is that, say, you may be watching movies or etc. for long night. So then that would be an obvious possibility that if you fall asleep. On the other hand, you are not having enough rest to your mind. You may be engaged with a lot of strain, a lot of stressful, say, activities. Then the mind get fed up, mind get exhausted. So during the meditation time, mind get the rest. So as a result, you become drowsy, you fall asleep. On the other hand, say you have changed the place of your practice. So if it is a gloomy place, again mind become drowsy, again you fall asleep. And on the other hand, there may be various physical ailments that also could contribute towards kind of a sleepiness. So instead of trying to sit, probably you can go for a walk. And even while walking, you have to keep your eyes open. And again, you can select an outside place rather than doing it inside. Try to walk outside and connected with the nature, enjoying with the nature, and still be mindful. So, and again, when you are sitting, try to find a fairly illuminated place, not a kind of a gloomy place, kind of an illuminated place, so that a lot of light is available, you feel awake. And when the mind concentrates, still you can be awake. Because, you know, when there are some irritations available in the mind, when there are excitement available in the mind, then you can't sleep. But on the other hand, if the practice is taking you to a lot of peace, tranquility, then there's a possibility of falling asleep. So you have to verify all these things. You have to check all these possibilities and find the right solution.
Question number 5 or 7, I think, is a general question. Dear Venerable Sir, thank you so much for the explanation of Patanisagga last week. I contemplated on this meaning this week from time to time. If I understand correctly, does this mean letting go on trying? Does this mean letting go or trying to run behind desires without satisfying it, or does it automatically happen? Trying to get this to my life, I'm trying to use materialistic things only for the need. But from time to time, my mind asks for things and I can see it running behind. Would you please give some advice on how to find the fine line between need and wants? Much merits, kind regards. Thank you. That's the end.
What is the last statement, Chatu? Your mic muted.
Sorry, the last, I guess the question is, would you please give some advice on how to find the fine line between need and wants? And I guess that's right. The question.
Actually, this vary. And the beginning, you may have a lot of needs and you therefore acquire so much things. And while you develop mindfulness, at one given time, you will understand these many things are not necessary. It's too much to look after. It's a kind of a burden. At that time, you like to give up. You can like to donate. And when next time you go to the supermarket, then you feel it is not essential. Only the necessary part you buy. So likewise, don't expect sort of a hard line immediately. So this line may vary. At the beginning, it may have, say, 100 needs. And with time, it may reduce to 90 needs. With time, it reduced to 50 needs. So likewise, so your essential needs, essential wants, are going to be a kind of a changeable factor, not a fixed factor. And be flexible on that. And don't try to immediately get on to a rough decision or to blame yourself, telling that you are having too much things, having too many desires, and you should not have all these. So if you are trying to too much apply things, apply various theories onto your mind prematurely, then it will be kind of a burden to yourself. And you are not enjoying them. But on the other hand, if you indulge so much, so that is the opposite. Where you are not recognizing what is necessary, you are always going to the supermarket, always going to the whatever the places and buying, acquiring. So that is the other end. So find out the middle, what is really needed, what is really necessary, what is really essential, and then you can find the line, what is applicable right now.
Question number 6 of 7. This is for mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, when the mind settles and the breath fades away, I always observe random thoughts, sometimes slightly and sometimes engulfed with them. From where do these thoughts arise, Bhante? They're not based on my intent, as my intention clearly was to settle the mind without thoughts before I start. What is the seed of these random thoughts? Is it karma or kilesa, anusaya or asura? That's the end.
All these are possibilities. It could be due to karma, it could be due to various anusaya, habitual tendencies, and again various memories, various projections. There are many reasons for the generation of thoughts. Actually, we can't immediately find out all these exact sources or exact reasons, but when they are arising, we can be fully aware of them. We can fully vividly aware how there is lust arising. Now there is anger arising. Now there is jealousy arising. So you are not making them yourself. You are not identifying with them. Jealousy is jealousy. Anger is anger. Lust is lust. And you can look at them objectively. They are not yours, and they are not yourself, and they don't belong to you. They come and go. They are simply visitors. So don't offer them tea. Like I have said previous occasion, don't offer them tea. Simply ask them to go. So especially during this corona period, so the visitors are not allowed. So you can apply the same rule to your mind. So keep your mind also with limited people, only the members, only the family members, no many visitors. So simply allow them to come. Don't resist, by the way. And once they come, don't struggle. And you simply be mindful about them, but don't encourage them. Don't offer them tea. And then they will go.
Question number 7, and I think this is the last one, is a general question. Dear Bhante, I managed to keep my mind devoid of any thoughts for quite a while today. I feel I am improving and my concentration is increasing gradually. I understand now by making the mind devoid of friction that I can raise the concentration of mind. I understand now the importance of a good teacher because all this time, although I tried, I felt I was getting lost and I could not feel the improvement. I wanted to share my experience and offer merit to you for your excellent guidance. Thank you. That's the end.
Okay, you're welcome. So kind of a rule of thumb is that our mind has to become very simple, not burdened and not entangled. The clarity of mind has to be increased and you have to feel peace. You have to feel at ease and feeling comfortable. So this and less attachments. So then we are in the correct direction. Yeah, so you can keep your practice and I encourage all of you to practice. So Buddha's teaching help us to have this clarity of mind, unentangled mind, unburdened mind and defilement-free mind. So that is, in a way, the freedom from suffering. So with that, I think we can conclude today's session. Thank you very much for participation and I look forward to I meet you all on next Sunday. Thank you very much for participation.
Thank you, Bhante. I just have two quick announcements. I might just share my screen. Just give me a second. Hopefully you can see that. So actually the first announcement was, I think the UK have gone to, I guess, daylight saving sort of time or some sort of time change. So we just want to get some feedback if the time is still suitable for you. Just put some comments in or send us an email. But I guess the main thing we wanted to actually talk about, the second announcement, is the end of year retreats. So usually we do have retreats in Australia at end of year, and that's usually handled by Venerable Dhammajiva. Because of Corona, there won't be any physical travel by Bhante. But there are some retreats that we're running. They'll be done virtually. So physically, the people will go to a location in either Brisbane, Sydney or Canberra, and you'll be practicing. But all the interactions, just like this program, will be done virtually. So there'll be still the discussion and also the theory discussion, I guess. So not much different to this program, technically. So if you do want to join into the programs, please drop an email. So there's a couple of different people running it for each region. And I believe the one in Canberra, Bhante, I believe you're running this one. So this is going to be a completely English retreat and also aimed towards younger sort of people, from what I understand. So yeah, look, if you've got any questions, just drop us an email or send us a message, and we'll give you further details. Just stop this for a second. Okay, so with that, we'd like to, there's one question. Is there any in Victoria? I believe not. I think probably there's some, because of the ongoing Corona situation, they haven't organized in Victoria. Is that correct, Aya? Yeah, so I don't think they've, yeah, I think what's happening in Victoria, they haven't decided to organize something. So I guess depending on the situation, you might be able to join into Sydney or Canberra. There's also limited places, so make sure you actually register if you're interested. If there's nothing else, and I don't see any other questions, we'll just wrap up for today. So we'd like to thank Bhante, as always, and pass our merits for giving up valuable time to actually run this program. Also to all the people behind the scenes, seen and unseen, for helping to organize and run this program. And also to the participants, because without you, we actually wouldn't have a program. So with that, I'd like to end the session. Tervan Sarnay.